The city of Madison is trying to bring healthy foods to low-income neighborhoods, neighborhoods that are considered food deserts. We'll find out what a food desert is, why this matters, and what can be done about them with a guest who says this is not just a big city problem. It exists nationwide, including in suburban and rural areas. Maybe you have a food desert in your community. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, July 19th. Plus, we will also talk with someone who is behind an effort in one of the possible solutions to food deserts, a mobile grocery store full of fresh, healthy foods. That's coming up a little bit later. And we will welcome your questions and experiences. Do you have easy access to healthy, fresh foods? Do you have a grocery store that's within a mile of your home? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Mari Gallagher, principal of Mari Gallagher Research and consultant and president of the National Center for Public Research. She joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
And we read about you in an article about Madison's problem of food deserts and Madison's efforts to curb this problem. And in that article, you were credited with popularizing the concept of food deserts through your research in Chicago.
That's right. We popularized the term food deserts in 2006 with the release of Examining the Impact of Food Deserts on Public Health in Chicago. We've done similar work around the country. And so what is a food desert? A food desert is a large geographic area that clusters that has no or distant mainstream grocery stores. And I know you mentioned a mile. There's no perfect distance to a grocery store because communities all around the country are so different. But the point being, in a food desert, you might have to go a long way to find healthy food. It's not that there isn't any kind of food. There's a lot of junk food and there's fast food and, but finding something simple, sometimes like an apple or a banana or skinless chicken rather than fried chicken, can be difficult in a food desert. So we see them in urban areas as well as rural areas and some suburban areas and even small hometowns.
Mm-hmm. In this article, the neighborhoods that had easy access to junk food at convenience stores or fast food places were called food swamps.
Mm-hmm.
And is that, that's it because it's not good for you and that's what's in easy access?
Right. That's another catchy term. In food deserts, if you want to say food swamps, what we see often, again, it's not that there isn't any food. It's that there's a great concentration of unhealthy food. So, for example, and again, we do this work around the country, but just last week we finished an analysis just for a particular Chicago community. We usually do these studies, citywide or sometimes countywide, sometimes five counties or more at the block level. So for every block, we look at every kind of food option. And in this one particular community, Roseland, there are 87 different kinds of stores, for example, that participate in SNAP, which is, the former food stamp program.
Mm-hmm.
And only two of them are mainstream stores. We use the term mainstream to describe the kind of place that could support a healthy diet on a regular basis. It doesn't have to be a chain store. It doesn't have to be traditional, but it has to be the kind of place that you can get, a variety of healthy foods. If you only went to that one store, and no one goes to one store, but if you did, it could support your healthy diet on a regular basis, whether you're a senior with diabetes or a growing child and so on. So just in that community, there are only two decent stores, and the rest of the stores, and this isn't even counting fast food, the rest of the stores are shabby convenience stores or corner stores. Nothing wrong with corner stores. There are some fabulous corner stores out there now. There's been a lot of focus on them. But in this particular neighborhood, it's, liquor stores, even dollar stores. There's a rise across the country in dollar stores, and they're selling more and more, quote-unquote, food, not necessarily healthy food. But, chips and soda, things like that, dried noodles, maybe a can of soup, but not something that would be good for you if that's all you had day in, day out.
What? How pervasive is this problem in the United States?
Well, We believe you really have to do studies locally and get down to the block level to have a good, accurate number. But, you know, roughly there's, you know, if you want to say there's about 310 million people in the United States, you know, if you want to say 10% of them live in a food desert, that's around 31 million people. That gets, you know, that's a very general statement. We really have to look place by place. So we have done this work, for example, in Detroit. We released a report in 2007 and found that almost, you know, the whole city was, it wasn't even that useful using the term food desert because it was just so pervasive just across the whole entire city. In Chicago in 2006, we had about 632,000 people living in the food desert. Again, these are areas that cluster, you know, so you might go, you know, these are huge land areas. And that's, fortunately, has been reducing each year. We've been tracking it every year, so it's down about 40%. So that's good news. But it's different in each place. So in some rural areas, you know, we've done some of this work in the South and more rural places, you know, you see similar kinds of problems. The data just looks a little different. And, of course, looking at transportation issues are, well, it's important everywhere, but, you know, in a rural area, if you don't have a car,
yeah.
And the grocery store is 10 miles away, it's a problem. And in many of these rural areas, too, where once upon a time, many different kinds of people grew food in their backyards and, you know, you had, you know, more local agriculture, that's not always the case. It's coming back, but... And, you know, urban agriculture, of course, is coming back. But it's very, very difficult. It's hard to choose food if you don't have access. We can preach, eat your fruits and vegetables, the Surgeon General. And I had the pleasure of meeting her. Oh, what a fantastic woman. But, you know, whoever the Surgeon General is, you know, does a great job in talking about how many fruits and vegetables every day we should eat. And the number, of course, goes up. It's 5, 6, 7, however many, you know, 8, 9, 10 servings a day. In some neighborhoods, you can't find a couple of servings. And if you do, they might be in a can loaded with salt or sugar. So it's an issue.
Yeah, and transportation issues also a big problem in urban areas. And in Madison, for example, one of our low-income neighborhoods doesn't have a grocery store within walking distance, certainly, but maybe 3 miles away is one, another couple of miles away another one. But it sounded like close to half of the residents of the neighborhood did not have their own cars, and even getting on a bus, the way the bus routes are, it could take a half hour or more just one way to get to a grocery store.
Right, and many times these neighborhoods are poor neighborhoods, but not always. We need to stay away from stereotypes, but in the kind of neighborhood that you're talking about, it's very likely that a good number of the residents, you know, they're working, they have a couple of jobs, they're busy, they're taking their kids around. They don't have a car, you know, they're trying to get here or there. It's, you know, we all know how it is to be time crunched, and it's not easy taking a couple buses. People say, well, just get on the bus, you know, get to the grocery store. We eat so regularly as part of the human condition that we're constantly looking for food as people. And it's not only is it difficult sometimes just to get to that store, but then to schlep home all the healthy, heavy stuff, you know, the bags of apples and things like that. We also developed a line of work called the convenience food factor, which means people shop for food most regularly at the places closest to them, even though they might desire or require, for medical reasons, healthier but more distant food. So when you have a neighborhood that's saturated with all of these other options, even if you're desiring to do a little bit better, you know, you think, well, today I'm really hungry now. I need something for my kids now. I need to make dinner now. You might just run down to the fast food place or the convenience store and, you know, pick up a frozen pizza or, you know, some chips and things like that, some soda. So it's difficult. And once we have access, it doesn't mean the problem's completely solved. There's a lot more work to do. But I think it's disingenuous to preach to people, you know, do the right thing, just say no to naughty food when it's so hard to find. You know, we like to think in America that everybody has an equal choice to pretty much everything, you know, that it's all about personal responsibility. But it's very difficult if you don't have access.
We are talking about food deserts, the problem, and possible solutions. We'll also talk about the health consequences. And we will welcome your calls, your questions for our guest, Mari Gallagher, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Coming up in just a few minutes, we will welcome in the owner of Fresh Madison Market. He has started an initiative to bring fresh foods to some of these food deserts in Madison. It's a mobile grocery store of sorts. We'll hear about that effort coming up in just a bit, too. And we have a caller who has a question. John in Beloit is with us. Hello, John.
Thank you for having me, Joy. One of my comments is I don't understand why the state of Wisconsin continues with the food stamp process. They can use their food stamp cards, and this is my niece who's she's on food stamps. She's got three kids, but she goes down to the gas station. She buys soda pop and ding dongs and Cheetos and stuff. And my wife and I have been really honored to get some counseling on food and food nutrition for the kids, because we've already we drop off bags of apples and this and that. And the kids love it, but the problem is in the local areas. The parent, a lot of it's educational, hugely educational, but also the state kind of, because it's good for business, now allows these food stamp cards to be used at gas stations and every place else. They really need to find a way to mark the food to be food. I'm talking like fruit is food to me. Soda pop is not. Ding dongs aren't. So I'll take my comments off the air.
All right.
I hope you guys have a great day.
Well, he's concerned that she's buying junk food at the gas station and not using her food stamps for healthy foods.
Right. You know, it's a big issue. It's a big issue, and some of it does fall on the participant, right? The individual choice that we make when we use that EBT card or the SNAP card, whatever you want to call it. However, it's partly a problem based on what's available. And there, first of all, SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, again, formerly food stamps, is a very, very important program, very important. And it helps feed a lot of people. And, again, we all need to eat as part of the human condition. However, there are some issues with the program. In short, there's two key problems. One, standards are too low. And two, many stores are not even following those low standards. So, for example, in Detroit, and there are many good things happening in Detroit, but when we did a study in 2007, we found that 92% of all of these SNAP retailers were what we call fringe, meaning they mostly specialize in unhealthy food. So you can't buy anything but ding-dongs or chips. You know, soda pop, mm-hmm. things like that, at many of these stores, and they really do saturate the market. So, one, standards are too low; two, and we're not meeting those low standards. And it's no small amount of money that flows through these stores. We did a study in Ohio, and we found that the average bakery that was participating in SNAP in a 9-month period. And many of these bakeries were very small. Some were the outlets where they're a little bit bigger and you can get lots of ding-dongs and everything's, you know, reduced, it's day old, you know, everything. They were making, on average, $68,000 in a 9-month period just on SNAP.
We are talking about food deserts with Mari Gallagher. She is president of the National Center for Public Research, and we will continue taking your thoughts and questions on this at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Fixing the food deserts. Scattered rain in eastern Wisconsin this morning and areas of fog in western and southern Wisconsin. Then decreasing clouds. It's going to be a sunny day today with highs in the 70s and 80s. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up this afternoon, At Issue with Ben Marins after 3 o'clock, Ben and his guest will talk about the worldwide influence of Stephen Covey, who died earlier this week at the age of 79. Ben and his guest will talk about his 7 habits of highly effective people and what each habit has meant to you. That's after 3 this afternoon. Continuing now as we discuss the problem of food deserts in Wisconsin and across the country for that matter, and What can we do to fix it? Joining us now is someone who's trying to help fix it. The owner of Fresh Market Madison. He's trying to address the issue of food deserts with his Fresh Mobile Initiative. Jeff Maurer joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
I'm good. I understand that you were motivated by a blueberry. Tell us about that.
That's right. My wife and I, a couple of years ago, had taken some fruit over to a local Boys and Girls Club over in the Ally Drive neighborhood of Madison. And as the kids were gathering around, I brought this one big fruit tray out, and they were just devouring it. It was very evident they were craving fruit, and they were lacking it in their diet. But most importantly, this young girl came up to me, who was probably 8 or 9, and asked me what this little blue round thing was. And I explained to her that it was a blueberry and that she should try it. And her eyes just lit up when she tasted it and how sweet it was. But when I asked her if she had ever seen one before, she hadn't. And that was the first time she'd ever tried a blueberry.
Yeah, isn't that a 9-year-old girl who didn't know what a blueberry was?
And that was heartbreaking.
Yeah.
I didn't think that should happen in our culture.
Yeah, so tell us, what is the Fresh Mobile Initiative?
It really came out of a program that we saw down in Chicago and went down almost a year ago to look at a program where some activists had received a city bus, donated bus, and they had tried to retrofit it into essentially a mobile grocery store. And I thought it was a great idea. We just took it to the next step, which was to build a customized trailer, especially designed as a grocery store, to be able to haul it out into the various neighborhoods in Madison that are classified as food deserts and where those neighbors don't have access to healthy and fresh foods.
Yeah, and how's it going? Are you out and about?
We are out and about. This is our third week in operation. It is hitting our projections already, and I am extremely excited about the numbers of people that we're serving, the kids that are coming through, especially now during the summer. I'm really glad that we rolled it out during the summer so that the kids are out of school and get a chance to see it firsthand. And they're seeing a lot of different products that they haven't seen before.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really excited about the types of food that they're buying, which is primarily fruit.
Yeah, and that's what you have, just what you consider fresh, healthy foods in your mobile grocery store.
Yes, there's about 225 different fresh produce items, as well as some dairy, meat, cheese, eggs, butter, yogurt, and a few meat products as well.
Yeah, and I think I read that you sold out the first time you went out.
Yes, our first time out, we actually had to come back in the middle of the shift and come back to my store to refill it.
Yeah, now, and this is a nonprofit venture, isn't that right?
Yes, we thought it was really important to set this up as a completely nonprofit, a 501c3, so that we could accept donations and grants, which we've been very fortunate to receive some assistance from Meritor Hospital, Physicians Plus, and the Madison Community Foundation. That really helped us get the dollars necessary to build this trailer, which the trailer itself is $70,000. So just a trailer. We had, of course, put in refrigeration and buy the truck to haul the trailer. But and then we can set up a nonprofit. We are operating the retail prices just enough to cover our cost.
Yeah.
There is no profit built into the retail prices.
Do you see this as a viable solution in most areas that have food deserts?
Based on the first 3 weeks, I would say absolutely, especially in some of the larger urban areas that have some density of population. Where transportation, may be an issue for some people, whether it's private or public. I see this as a real viable opportunity where they can bring the trailer to the people rather than trying to get people to, inconveniently locate or take a bus, whatever, to another food store.
Yeah. Are you in a different neighborhood every day or a couple times a week, or what's the schedule?
Right. We are in 6 different neighborhoods in Madison. And almost all of them are twice per week, with the exception of Owl Creek neighborhood. We go there once a week. But the other neighborhoods are all twice per week, once in the morning and then later in the week in the afternoon.
Yeah. Is there
So we try to vary the shifts so we can get to the majority of people who may have different work schedules.
Yeah. Is there a website where you have your more information?
Yes, all the information is on marketonwheels.com.
Market on Wheels. Well, thank you very much for joining us. We appreciate you letting us know.
Thank you. I appreciate your help.
Jeff Maurer, owner of Fresh Madison Market, he and his daughter started Fresh Mobile Initiative, an effort to try to bring a mobile grocery store to the neighborhoods in Madison considered food deserts, where residents don't have easy access to fresh, healthy foods. Mari Gallagher is with us for the rest of the hour. She works on this issue as well, does a lot of research on this issue. What do you think of this idea of the Fresh Mobile Initiative, Mari?
Just fantastic. It's wonderful. It's so great to see different types of solutions pop up. You know, with food deserts, there's not one single reason why we have them, and there's not one silver bullet. And it really brings, you know, food to the people. It's a really great alternative. And it, believe it or not, it also stimulates the marketplace. You know, the more choices we have, the more, people can have those different options. And, it attracts other kinds of businesses, too. I mean, that's the interesting thing. I mean, we're seeing in different food desert areas once people start coming up with solutions, and they can be community-based. Even traditional market people notice, and they think, maybe I overlooked that market. But it's good to have different choices, and certainly that's a very creative choice. And we're also very familiar with the Chicago group that he talked about, freshmoves.org. They were motivated after our original report came out to do a mobile option, and they just have been doing fantastic work. So, and we're seeing more and more mobile options around the country, as well as other kinds of solutions, like working on grocery stores, regular traditional grocery stores. That's not the only solution. Helping corner stores, improve their offerings. Yeah. There are many, many different things, vertical farms, urban agriculture. So it's all good news. But
let me hold you there. We're going to check news, and then we'll talk more about food deserts after this news. How do we solve the problem of food deserts in Wisconsin? These are areas that do not have access to healthy foods. There's not a grocery store nearby with fresh, healthy foods. We just heard about one attempt to solve the problem in the Madison area, a Freshmobile, like a bookmobile, only it's filled with fresh produce and healthy foods. What are some other solutions? And why is this such a problem anyway? We'll talk more about that. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 6:37 on this Thursday, July 19th. Our guest is Mari Gallagher, principal of Mari Gallagher Research and Consulting and president of the National Center for Public Research. And she's done a lot of research on the concept of food deserts. And we have other callers who are joining in. Let's go to Tom in Burlington next. Hello, Tom.
This really is a big problem. Someone was saying that because people are not eating right, that our diet is so bad that diabetes is going to cost us $1 trillion a year. That's a tremendous amount of money. The thing is, the way I look at it here, I've been pouring water on my neighbor's garden for the last 3 weeks trying to get some water, and thank God we got some water last night.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, we have farmers here in Wisconsin that cannot get young people to work on farms. They can't get them to come and do any of the work. And years ago, we had summer vacation was for kids to help bring in the food, plant the food, and take care of the food for the growing season. Then we got away from that, and now kids don't want to work on farms. And we've gotten so far away from, if you just plant your seed and water it, it will grow. And the kids in Edgewater in Chicago, they have a little place there where the whole little town, the area, they take these vacant lots and they grow things.
Yeah, that's right. Well, Tom, thank you for that idea. What about community gardens, that sort of thing, Mari Gallagher?
Well, they're fantastic. And again, there's not one single problem or solution, so people should look to where their passion is. And community gardens, urban farms are, you know, great, great projects. And they serve many different goals. They help remind people where food comes from. Sometimes, you know, kids today don't know that food, you know, really healthy food sometimes comes from the ground. It doesn't always come from a can. You know, and I really appreciated that comment, and I want to tell your listeners, especially those who have farms or maybe want to do a little, community garden project, that every year a group called FamilyFarmed.org has a Good Food Festival conference, and many, many farmers participate, even urban farmers. Many urban farmers, there are different educational tracks for how to get financing. I'm very proud to be on the board of this group. It was founded by a guy, Jim Slama, a great guy. But it's really a great conference, and we bring in people from other nearby states. So look for that. It's every March, and you can just go to familyfarmed.org. But I also want to pick up on his comment about diabetes.
Right.
And, you know, in Chicago, we found statistically significant relationships between poor food access and greater rates of premature death by diabetes after we control for the other things that we will all die from someday, you know, just aging and certainly income and race and education are variables that that predict, you know, different kinds of outcomes. But controlling for that, we find more diabetes, we find more obesity. In fact, there's a new term called diabesity, and it's just a huge issue. In Washington, D.C., we finished a report not too long ago. It's not public yet, but we found that babies are 10% more likely to be born overweight just based on their mother's food environment, beginning when the food store is a half a mile away. So it's a serious problem. And certainly if people like gardening and urban farming, you know, we need to bring the sexy back to farming. And there's a lot of support to help the, you know, farm to fork and to have, you know, regional food systems where people can actually grow their own food. Food can be local. It doesn't have to travel, you know, from so far away. So these are all important measures.
Mm-hmm. There was a recent piece in the New York Times, I believe, that was questioning whether there was a link between the obesity rate and food deserts. And I think you take issue with that.
Well, we do. That was Gina Collada's piece, April 18th, and she entitled it Studies Question Pairing of Food Deserts and Obesity. And there were a number of misstatements in her piece. So many people around the country that have been working on this issue for years were really outraged by it. You know, so she really sets up what we consider as like a straw man, saying that, oh, some people think that once you have access, the problem is solved. And no one says that. It's more complicated. But certainly access is a foundational piece. And there were some other issues. There have been so many studies that have shown the relationship between food access and health. And so you had a couple of new studies. And quite frankly, the authors themselves of these studies talked about how their findings were limited. And anyone who wants to see our three-page response to that can go to marigallagher.com. And we have, you know, all the details about why that was such a poor article. It really did everybody a disservice and really out of character with the New York Times. But certainly access is important. Once you have access, we need things like education. We have to make good personal choices. There's a whole number of things that have to happen, but access is certainly important. You can't choose healthy food if you don't have access to it, and that seems pretty basic.
Let's take another call. Laura in Fond du Lac is with us. Hello, Laura.
Hi. I wanted to comment on the fact that sometimes even when the places where you can shop and find healthy foods are fairly close by, they can still be difficult to get to. Now, for example, I live in Appleton, and because my husband and I own vehicles, the store which we do most of our shopping at is pretty easy for us to get to. It's about a mile away from where we live, but if I had to walk that, I didn't own a car, particularly if I were a single mother and had to bring a child with me, that would be a difficult trip for the simple reason that the sidewalk runs out, and this is the way our cities are planned now. Joy, I know you're from Appleton. You can probably visualize one of these north side intersections that are very busy.
Yes.
And, you know, yeah, the sidewalk continues heading north, but the east-west sidewalk stops. And so if I had to walk to that supermarket, I would be forced to walk through the parking lot, which is challenging. And if you have a child or two with you, it's even more challenging. I would be limited to buying what I could either carry with hands or stuff in the stroller, which isn't much. So I really like what we're talking about with these mobile fresh market stores. I think that's a fabulous idea. If we do it with ice cream trucks, why not with fresh food?
Sounds good. Laura, anything else, Laura?
Yeah, the other point I wanted to make is we talked about the convenience market shopping. I just wanted to put in a plug for a Wisconsin-owned convenience market. Quick Trip has a vast selection of fresh foods, a lot of fresh fruit, yogurt, dairy foods, even cereals that you can purchase. And frankly, I buy my milk there because it's cheaper than in the supermarket. But that's one option for people who maybe have to now and then shop at those places.
Thank you very much, Lauren. Yeah, that's right. There is some of the convenience stores like Quick Trip do have healthy foods in them, too. But let's address first her concerns over just transportation issues, that it's, even if you have a grocery store that is maybe within walking distance, it's not very easy if your communities aren't set up for walking, Mari.
Right. And many communities are not set up for walking. So she raises a really good point, and that's what we address in our very detailed block-level studies. It's really not appropriate to say, oh, if it's within a mile, then you have access, or, you know, whatever right. The figure is. People throw around different figures, but it really depends place by place, and then it depends how walkable the area is. And, you know, sometimes it's hard, too, in the winter. You know, I know you have some cold winters like we do out mm-hmm. there in Wisconsin, and, you know, you're pushing your carts, and like she said, you know, you're taking your kids. So it's difficult, and that's why the mobile market is a good option. You know, all of these different choices will help improve access. So we need to make healthy choice the easy choice, and then we still have work to do. But your caller is absolutely right. And, you know, when your colleague was on earlier talking about his blueberry, I mean, we have met kids in different parts of the country, like, for example, in the South, that have never seen strawberries. So when you really start telling these stories, people start understanding, like, oh, okay, maybe it is really hard. You know, maybe that mile or that mile and a half it's just a hard barrier to overcome. So we have to find ways to make access easier.
And I do need to correct myself. Jeff Maurer, who is owner of Fresh Madison Market, was with us in our first half hour, and he started what is called the Fresh Mobile, like the book mobile, and I was calling it Fresh Mobile, but it's Fresh Mobile. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the possible answers to food deserts in Madison, and apparently other communities as well. Talk a little bit about convenience stores that might stock healthier foods rather than just ding dongs and chips.
Right. Well, this is a big movement called the corner store movement. There are many fine people all around the country working to improve corner stores. It's really a great idea, corner stores and convenience stores, to help them step up and to help strengthen the market for healthy foods. Now, sometimes they complain, some of these store owners, that, well, you know, it's hard to keep perishables. They don't know how to do it. They're not, you know, it's not as easy as when the potato chip man comes and he just brings the big cart of potato mm-hmm. chips and plops it down. So there's a little work to do there, but there's, you know, there's a lot of work around the country with the corner store network and different folks helping finance improvements at corner stores. You know, when we were on break, you talked about how power went out. You know, we have these storms, people lose power. Oftentimes, these small stores, they're not equipped with, you know, usually they're not equipped with emergency systems, so their food's, I mean, it's just, mm-hmm. it's difficult. And it's a public health concern. It really is. It's a food safety concern sometimes in these small stores, especially, and I inspect many stores, you know, we see things like, you know, sometimes if they have meat, you know, it's not good, or, you know, the produce is, you know, if they have it, it has mold on it. So, you know, we really have to look at quality as well, and also price. But convenience stores are, you know, people, time is a commodity, and if people can pop in and out of the store and make a healthy choice rather than just an unhealthy one, that's a good thing. And so once they have the choice, then we have to help promote that better choice. But so convenience stores are a good way to go. The other thing people don't realize sometimes, and I think a previous caller talked about it a little bit, is just the preponderance of these other kinds of stores, like the gas stations that are in now they're part of the food stamp program, and growing numbers. And so even like dollar stores, they have a rising share of consumables, and they have huge market expansion plans. About, you know, so for example, Family Dollar, it's just growing exponentially in terms of its food sales. It now comprises about 70% of all the company's sales. And together, Family Dollar, Dollar General, and Dollar Tree operate almost 20,000 outlets across the United States. So I'm not against dollar stores. I'm just saying in some neighborhoods, you might only have a not good convenience store and maybe a dollar store and a gas station mini mart.
Yeah.
And those are your options. So that's kind of tough.
I'm going to check weather, and then we'll take more calls on food deserts and how to fix the problem of food deserts. These are areas that don't have easy access to healthy, fresh foods. There's not a grocery store, perhaps, that's within easy access. And we're talking about why this is a problem and what can be done about it. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. It's going to be another sunny, warm day today. Highs today will be in the 70s and 80s. Scattered rain in eastern Wisconsin this morning and areas of fog in western and southern Wisconsin, then turning mostly sunny today. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We're going to talk about hot foods and hot sauces and the spicy foods movement coming up after 8 o'clock this morning. Coming up after 7, we will talk about some issues relating to voting. Another Wisconsin judge has declared Wisconsin's voter ID law unconstitutional, and there is an effort to try to purge Wisconsin's voter registration lists, the voter registration rolls of ineligible voters, specifically non-citizens. We'll talk about both of those issues coming up after 7 o'clock with a guest from the Wisconsin League of Women Voters. Right now, we are talking about the problem of food deserts, and we're welcoming your questions. We're welcoming your possible solutions. Mari Gallagher is our guest. She is the president of the National Center for Public Research, talking about this in part because this is an issue across the country and in Madison. Something is trying to be done about it. Our Mayor Soglin is calling for a citywide food policy to curb the problem of food deserts in Madison. And certainly this is not just a problem in Madison, though. It's a problem not just of cities either. It's a problem facing suburbs and rural areas as well. Will in Madison is with us next. Hello, Will.
Hi, good morning. I'm really grateful for this conversation. This is very important. When I think about the issue here in Madison, I've heard that people who live in the food desert areas, the vast majority don't own cars, so they truly are on foot. They're also in isolated locations, having to cross major roads, highways at some times. My question is, what does race and class and the intersection of those have to do with this? When I think about where the food deserts are in Madison, it strikes me it's in neighborhoods that there are poorer families and mostly people of color. And I'm wondering if that's a trend throughout the nation.
Mari?
It is. We do need to be, and you're not suggesting a stereotype, but we are all always careful to correct the stereotype that food deserts are always urban and they're always poor and they're always black. So sometimes people talk about the inner city problem. And I know that's not where you're going with this. But it is true that, for example, in Chicago and in many other areas that we've looked at, so you're talking about Madison, for example, you do see race and place and other types of conditions like food deserts, you know, they travel together. So, for example, in Chicago, I mentioned the food desert reduced by 40%. That's good news. But the vast majority of food desert residents are still African American in Chicago. And so not only do we have, in those particular neighborhoods, food deserts, and maybe the same in Madison, too, you have job deserts, you have other kinds of issues. So for lots of different complicated reasons over the last, you know, 10, 20, 30 years, there has been disinvestment. There have been a number of other things that have gone on, white flight and different kinds of things. But on the other hand, too, we see a lot of stereotype breakers. So, for example, in Chicago, we identified over 12,000 households in the food desert that earn over $100,000 a year or more. So not everybody is poor. There are many poor families. But we need to go in and investigate each time. But unfortunately, the color of food does show up in many of the studies that we conduct, where we see a stark relationship between lack of access and the, you know, basically minority communities, you know, underserved, specifically underserved African American communities, but other types of communities as well. We also see a number of single mothers caring for children under 18, you know, high concentrations. In Chicago, we look at the patterns of disabled children. We see that the patterns are all across the city, but then as children age and they become adults and they become older, they concentrate in the food desert. So there definitely are vulnerable families in the food desert. But, you know, there are a lot of different kinds of communities, and in many of these communities there is a market for food. It's just been, you know, overlooked by the market. So the market is not perfect. So, you know, people do buy food as part of the human condition.
Let's, Joe in Madison, along those lines. Hi, Joe.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a business person, and I guess I look at, you know, the model of supply and demand, and I question, you know, if there's a demand there, wouldn't these convenience stores be putting in the fresh food, and wouldn't they be putting in the product? Because if there's a buck to be made, they'll make it. It's the same as they put in lottery ticket machines so that they can sell lottery tickets and make bucks. So I guess I think we're maybe getting the cart ahead of the horse here a little bit, because we have to create the demand and then create a safe environment to be able to get the product there. And I get a little bit concerned that we're probably throwing a bunch of tax dollars and grant money at things that are not going to have any real benefit in the end.
All right. What about that, Murray?
Joe, that is a great question, and it reminds me of the joke about the two economists from the University of Chicago walking down the street, and the one economist says to the other economist, "Hey, wasn't that a $20 bill that we saw on the sidewalk?" And as they keep walking, the other guy says, "No, if that was a $20 bill, somebody would have picked it up already." So there are people who say, well, hey, the market has the free hand. It's supposed to work. So if there aren't healthy food choices, there must not be a market. And actually, the market doesn't always work. Sometimes there is a $20 bill left on the sidewalk. There's a lot of leakage out of these even poor areas without cars to other areas that have, you know, some healthy food choice. Some dollars are leaking out, and people are spending their money elsewhere because they don't have the option locally. The funny thing about retail, it's kind of a Yogi Berra problem. Retail attracts retail, and like attracts like, in either a positive or negative direction. So stores agglomerate. So the irony is that grocery stores attract more grocery stores, and areas without grocery stores, you know, the grocer might go look at a certain area and think, well, there must not be a market for food. There are no grocery stores. Grocery stores sometimes complain about competition, yet they're attracted to it, and it's better for the store and it's better for the consumer. Again, all these choices are better for everybody, and, you know, and that's the market, and, you know, public health as well. But it's not always the case, and that's why when we had Jeff on earlier and he talked about selling out, you know, I'm not saying it's a slam dunk and it's just, you know, it's easy as pie and everybody's going to stop buying chips and everybody's going to buy kale. But there have been many studies and many efforts, not just studies, but efforts, people going out and opening up market, you know, offering different kinds of healthy food choices. And people have been buying those products. So I think just to say, let the market fix it, is you know, overlooks a serious problem with the market and with public health.
We'll leave it there. Thank you very much for being with us. This was a very enlightening hour.
Well, I enjoyed myself. Nice to see you all, Wisconsin, vis-a-vis the airwaves, and I hope to come back soon.
We will continue to follow up on this issue as we try to solve the problem of food deserts in Madison and throughout Wisconsin and elsewhere. Mari Gallagher, principal of Mari Gallagher Research and Consulting and president of the National Center for Public Research. Thanks to Amanda Magnus, to Naya Mukherjee, and to Rob Ferret for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.